When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're going to delve a bit into the coaching around Anzac round, the strategy inside the game itself when Essendon and Collingwood meet, and a bit broader as well. I love our strategy session every week. I hope you do too. I have Brenton Sanderson's words ringing my ears while I call games. It's ringing my ears. I'm calling on Thursday night and going, all right, we're on the race to 12 goals here. Not even he would have thought it would happen by halftime.
Well, this has been emphatic from the Dogs. It's been a magnificent response. 12-4-76 to 4-3-27.
In a lounge room somewhere, Brenton Sanderson playing Anthony Green just called it for the Bulldogs.
12 goals would win it. 12-4 at half time against the stingy Saints.
Sando is here from a cafe coffee catch-up. Win free McCafe coffee for a year on the My Maccas app. Were you calling it?
That was awesome, wasn't it? to get that 12 goals right before halftime was great, and the Bulldogs fans would have been loving every second of that. They dismantled the defence, didn't they, of St Kilda, and they were really on their heels, the poor old Saints. And yeah, we predicted what the Bulldogs had to do, and they did it in spades. They were fantastic.
It's like calling an election before 8 p.m.
Yeah,
before 8 p.m. it was known. Beautiful. Yeah. I love the idea. So we're going to start just in a slightly different direction today around coaching on Anzac Day or in an Anzac-inspired round. So you've done it. Community coaches will be doing it across the public holiday and the round itself. So just give us a thought or two around how you would approach coaching when there is a grander theme and how to appropriately weave that into a football context.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite rounds of the season on the AFL calendar. I think the AFL do this extremely well. Tonight's game is electric, and how the AFL have all that that sort of energy pre-game, and when the players come out, it's such a great spectacle. And I'll be there tonight with you, Jared. I can't wait for that. And then obviously tomorrow is the showpiece with Collingwood versus Essendon, and it's done so well. You know, the last post, it's just one of the great moments in sport. And I think we sometimes make, and this is just my opinion, Jared, I think sometimes we make the error, even at AFL level, but particularly at community level, when we compare AFL, to the defence force and what our young soldiers have, or I guess are currently doing when they're on service, but also to what's gone before us. But I think we're drawn to that because of the values of the Anzac spirit, you know, courage and mateship, sacrifice, endurance. They're very similar values to what football clubs have. And we often can sometimes go too deep on that, I think, when it comes to footy games. And it can distract players from the process of winning a game of football. So I was a senior coach for 3 years. We did it at Adelaide because at AFL level, you've got the players full time. We took the opportunities, and I thought I really enjoyed it, and I think the players did at the time as well. We took the opportunity to focus on different elements in Australia's history. We focused on Gallipoli, obviously, one year, the Rats of Tobruk, and also to Kokoda, which I know some AFL clubs, I know Hawthorn in particular, you know, they do the Kokoda Trail, and they take their players on that sort of adventure, which the players get an education as well as preparing them for those similar values as I discussed. But I think sometimes it's foolish to be able to almost drown players in those elements and those emotions before a footy game. I think it's a little bit disrespectful, I think. But I think the AFL have done it perfectly. I love the way that they've done it. I was lucky enough to be an assistant coach at Collingwood for 5 years and be at Anzac Day, and just the emotion of that pre-game, I absolutely love it. But I think just a word of advice for community coaches: just be careful how much you sort of go to that pre-game this weekend, and a lot of leagues will play tomorrow as well. But yeah, I just think it's risky because you can actually distract players from the process of playing the game. And like I said, I think it's a bit disrespectful sometimes when we compare AFL to what's gone before us.
Is there, have you sort of got the right level in your mind of the right touchstone? So I think in my memory of last year, our junior footy, is there was a moment silence before yep. they played, which was beautifully appropriate to give 10-year-olds just a sense of, so this is what it is, this is why we observe it, and now the joy is we get to go and play football because of what was sacrificed yeah, in the past.
100%. And I think we use the opportunity to educate, but not to compare. And you're right, Jared. And even I'm obviously director of sport at Mentone Grammar. I've just left the school this morning. Beautiful assembly this morning with the Anzac spirit and, you know, the last post. It was just sensational. And I'm glad our students and our children are still educated on our history, and obviously our current defence force and everything that they're, you know, working so hard to protect the country. So, but yeah, I just a word of warning for community coaches across all levels is I think it's unfair to compare when we go from sport to obviously war and everything that our young men and women are going through at the moment.
One of the strategic topics of the week has been the advantage of getting a bye in season at a meaningful moment. And Craig McRae and Simon Goodwin have both sort of given details of what have they been able to do? How have they used it to correct what's been going on in their game early doors?
We started the season with 6 days, 6 days, 6 days, and then we didn't realise that parts of our game were so far off. So then you go, oh God, we're going to have to fix that in game. And try to find a way to do some of those things better than what we are currently or what we were doing. So when you actually get a deeper breath, then you get to work on those things. You can train some habits and change some focus areas. And, I didn't realise how much we needed the break.
Obviously, it's a long preparation, you know, 13 days into the next game. So as soon as we got back, we got in some really good training. You know, we've had three really good sessions on the way back in, ability to train some of the things that we want to improve on. And some of the things that we haven't executed that well in the last few weeks. So we've been able to reset ourselves and, you know, hopefully we come out tomorrow night and we're, you know, the Melbourne of old and the team that we want to be.
So there's clearly no substitute to being able to train what you're trying to improve. And training what you're trying to improve without a break is clearly very difficult.
No, 100%. And I just think, and we saw Collingwood with the ability to be able to refresh, replenish their squad, get some players, you know, a decent block of training into them. They were a different side, weren't they, the Pies? They were so good. And it just gives the opportunity for a coach to be able to work on some elements of their game style, which have been breaking down, and look for opportunities to obviously improve. The only disadvantages, I think, with the bye, you just lose a little bit of team cohesion, a little bit of competitive edge, because you don't hit bodies at training. Like you do in games. And Craig McRae was right when he said sometimes when you've got those breaks and you need to rest players during the week, you actually got to try and learn in game, which is a really dangerous element of trying to improve. Collingwood looks so much better after the bye last week. It looks like they're almost back to their best form. And Melbourne haven't quite got the bye week right. Their recent history, since 2013, they're 4-7 after the bye. So that'd be a nice little test for them tonight. They're coming up against a side that'll be hungry as well. But it's important to get that bye week right. Replenish, rest, work on those areas, but make sure you're not losing that competitive edge. You've got to get an element of match simulation in there, controlled match simulation. You don't want bodies to be hit when they need to be resting. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how Melbourne jump Richmond tonight.
What's the difference between studying what you're trying to change and talking about what you're trying to change and practicing and training what you're trying to change?
Yeah, well, like Craig McRae said, if you're trying to change elements in game, it's out of your control. Whereas at training, you can blow the whistle, you can get players in. A lot of coaches now have the ability to be able to get up vision of training even, and, you know, they can take the players inside, bring them back out. So it's a controlled environment. The ability to be able to teach and players learn in an environment where they can get immediate feedback from the coach. So the coach is out on the field. They record training sessions now behind the goals view, side view, or what we call broadcast view. So then they can educate players rather than have to wait till after the game, win, lose or draw, and then do the review on the Monday.
Brenton Sanderson with our strategy session. So we're together at the MCG tonight, Melbourne and Richmond. So give me a taster, give me a teaser, and then in our pregame we'll go deeper tonight.
Well, obviously Melbourne, now they're, and Richmond are coming off the bye as well, but Melbourne need to return to that style of play, which makes them great. They got beaten in every single aspect last time they played Brisbane. And it was unusual because they got really bullied around the ball, which is not Melbourne's style. They allowed too many uncontested marks. They were really slow. It felt like coming off those sort of short breaks, and we heard Simon Goodwin talk about it. But they got out tackled. They got out tackled by 23 against Brisbane. Their marks were down by about 40, and their uncontested possessions were down. So I think the big adjustment, like Cozzie Pickett, him coming back in from a strategic point of view, the pressure that he brings, that work around contested ball and stoppage, you know, removing Ben Brown from the lineup is obviously a strategy that they're looking to. They obviously felt they were too tall against Brisbane. But Petraka, Viney, Oliver, and the question mark, you know, Oliver just looks a little bit sore as well, that last game. So they just need to get back to, you know, asserting their dominance around contest. And I just sort of feel potentially this could be the breakout game for Van Ruin. I just think that, you know, that undermanned back line for Richmond at the moment, I know they get Grimes back, but it just feels like they're not at their ruthless best, Richmond, defensively. So that feels like this might be the breakout game for the big key forward for Melbourne. If they can get on top around midfield and clearance. They probably need more from Petty. Petty only 2 disposals last time they played. But for me, the strategy for Melbourne, get back around contested ball, get set up behind the ball, May and Lever, the way that the, you know, obviously Richmond move the ball. They've got to look for opportunities that they can come off their opponents and intercept. But for me, and I guess for Melbourne, the key matchup is going to be Shea Bolt. If I'm Simon Goodwin tonight, I look at that Richmond list, and yes, they get some players back, but if you can limit Bolton's influence on this game, I just think that's crucial. So I think a kid like McVee, I think he's probably the one that can go to Bolton and try and shut him down, limit his influence. I think that's the key elements tonight for Melbourne.
Now, when the Richmond team landed last night, I thought, right, this is yep. for us. 2 ruckmen. Nan Curvis and Naismith. So this is Uze against a team that he knows especially well. He clearly thinks this is essential.
Yeah, so he would look at Max Gawn. And the last time they played, Gawn finished that game off. And it was almost the match winner last time that Melbourne played Richmond. And you mentioned that Uze knows the midfield of Melbourne inside out. So it's important. I think they're going to look to... Bash and crash is the wrong word, but they're going to look to wear down Max Gawn. He's the one that obviously kickstarts everything for the Demons, and they're going to try and double-team him, which means they'll just keep putting a big, fresh man on him. And it's a combination of jumping into him in ruck contests and trying to work him around the ground. So it's a strategy which we've seen work previously, but it's not... Like, I think the game's changed so much, Jared. I think it's a running, fast game now where speed wins. You can have too many big men on the field. And I think sometimes coaches, we think I'm going to pick a tall because they're going to mark it. It's almost in the modern game, you pick a tall so the opposition don't mark it.
Yes.
It's more so that they're trying to bring the ball to ground. So this looks like it's a tactic purely to try and wear down Max Gawn and limit his influence either in the ruck, but also to behind the ball. So when he drops back defensively, they're going to want an aerial player to stop Max marking the ball. And to, you know, prevent Lever and May coming off their opponents and influencing those aerial contests too. So fascinating to see how this plays out, because I think when this game will be decided in the fourth quarter, that Richmond are going to need speed. They're not going to need tools on the ground. So
potentially sub one of them out.
So and we'll talk about it later tonight, but you'd be thinking halfway through the third quarter that that's the lever that they would pull. If there's no injuries, is take one of the big men off and replenish it with speed.
And what's the element? So Adam Uze knows Melbourne well. Does he convince his Richmond players this is how you beat Melbourne? I've seen it. I've lived it. Now, there's one thing between strategizing and another between executing it, but this is it. Yep. And maybe get the fizz from that.
100%. And he'll spend quite a bit of time with individuals this week going through certain matchups and where potentially they can get an they can get an advantage. But they have to move the ball quickly tonight. That's one area against, I think with Melbourne, is you have to go fast. And we saw that with Brisbane last week. Get the contest right, get the ball from inside to outside, and then run. So you must take Melbourne on. You've got to look for opportunities to get the ball inside their forward line quickly to even number, low number contests. So they're going to rely so heavily on Rioli. So if I'm Simon Goodwin now, I'm getting that matchup right too. I think Rioli, and I talked about Bolton, but I think Rioli off the back, he's going to be so important. So Melbourne need to ensure he's not facing the game with space in front of him because they know he's a ball carrier. So Goodwin will have a plan for him as well. So Bolton and Rioli are the two for me. And obviously we've already seen the first strategic lever they've pulled, which is picking two rucks. But they just can't play slow. That allows Melbourne to get set up. They can't have those deep, long, high balls inside their forward 50. That helps Lever, May, McDonald, Gorn. They've got to look for those 30 to 40-metre shots from goal. And that's where if I'm at Amuzo tonight, I'm saying if we're going to win this game, almost all of our goals will be running shots from 50 or be set shots from sort of 35-plus out. So you can't bomb it in against Melbourne. That plays to their advantage. It's those little low kicks that just break the 50-metre arc, or it's those running shots from Baker, from Rioli, from Bolton, who are breaking the 50-metre arc and getting those running shots. I think that's the way to beat Melbourne tonight if you're Richmond.
All right, the strategic primer for Melbourne and Richmond at the MCG tonight. We're going to delve deep Essendon and Collingwood, and Geelong and Carlton, the two big games of this round. Melbourne's weather, a shower or two easing, top of 16. United Energy's year-round vegetation inspection and cutting program is keeping communities safe. The Anzac Day Essendon-Collingwood encounter. My mates and I went to the 1995 game, myself being an MCG regular at that point, said, let's go to the Ponsford entry. Little did we know, we pushed in front of about 15,000 people in the queue. Whoops. And Michael from Richmond, I've been to every Anzac Day since 95. I'm only 34 years old. This is the first one I've missed out. I'm a 34-year full AFL Gold member with Collingwood Club support, but could not get a ticket. That's how quickly they went. I'm shattered, but okay with it. It will be an amazing day, one for all to enjoy, whether you are a Collingwood or Essendon supporter. Good luck to all. Go Pies, Michael in Richmond. Brenton Sanderson is here for our strategy session. Our McCafe coffee catch-up. Buy any McCafe coffee on the Might Maccas app for a chance to win free coffee for a year. This is just perfectly timed, Sando, after recent events.
Yep.
So one at a time. What changed for Collingwood to your eye as they came together last week?
No, you're right, Gerald. I could talk for hours on this game, so just pull me up if I just keep waffling on here. But it was great to see the Pies back in form. The last time we spoke about Collingwood, I just thought they weren't getting enough ball winners. They only had two players up until last week averaging more than 20 possessions per game, and that was the Dacos brothers. Last year they averaged 8 players. So 8 players per week would get 20 possessions or more. So they just weren't getting their hands on the footy to start the season off. Against Port last week, they had 7 players get above 20. And it was the usual suspects. So it was the Dacos brothers again, Mitchell, DeGoey, Sidebottom was almost back to his best. And then Hoskin Elliott, who was fantastic, and obviously Maynard playing across half back. So I also mentioned the key element for Collingwood is they give up too many marks when they lose. They give up 100 marks when they lose. They give up only 84 marks to their opponents when they win. Port only had 83. So there's the tick, right? So I just thought their ability to get from contest to contest, shut away mark chains, that high-energy offense was back, that burst from contest and stoppage. They didn't have to spend as much energy in defense last week against Port Adelaide. They just look like they got their mojo back post-bye. So as we heard from Craig McRae, work on some elements, some controlled training sessions, bit of a freshen up, and they were back to their best. Plus 42 contested possessions. Unbelievable. Their intensity and work rate lifted, so a big tick from all that as well. And I'm caught up in the Reed hype over in WA as well. What a week he had last week. Let's not forget Nick Dacos. Okay, He had a huge impact on the game. And he actually didn't even start that. He didn't actually start that well, but he finished with 14 score involvements, 15 contested possessions, 8 clearances. So let's not forget about Nick Dacos. He was absolutely brilliant. So Essendon have got to ensure they've got a plan for him. They haven't quite got that right. In previous encounters when Essendon have played Collingwood, they haven't got that element of Nick Dacos right. So I think that was a key element to Collingwood returning to their best form, was getting their best young player back into red hot form as well. The other element I liked about Collingwood last week, Jared, their centre bounce in particular against a really good Port Adelaide midfield was excellent. They won centre bounce clearances 18-10, and they scored 16 points to only one against Port Adelaide. So that's been a strength of Essendon too. And I've been really impressed with the Bombers. I just think the way, apart from that Port Adelaide game, which they were really disappointing, this midfield has really stepped up for the Bombers. They've been led by Merritt, obviously, we know that. Martin's taken the next step. Parrish has now got four games under his belt and is returning to good form. Don't forget about his Anzac Day record as well. Parrish, he's won at least one Anzac Day medal, but it feels like every time he plays against Collingwood on Anzac Day, he plays well. Cordwell, Gresham had six clearances last week against the Crows. They've just got more options than what they've previously had, the Bombers, and their numbers on a through the midfield and clearance has been excellent. So I think that's going to be a key element to this game, is who gets contest and clearance right. They're both top five sides for contested possession differential, so that could potentially decide the game. There's just so many elements in this game to watch.
I thought so. Brad Scott's had two excellent coaching weeks.
Yep.
And we noted that, so he coached very specifically against the Bulldogs, and then he had a strategy which totally stymied Adelaide. Really, Adelaide could only get out the back goals.
Yep,
they
you're right.
couldn't get much in general play whatsoever. So I suspect they're in a phase where, yes, they have their defined style, but he's coaching their ears off from game to game to game.
Yep.
And then how long you can do that for, how much changes from week to week if you do it that way, and what he might be able to come up with against Collingwood tomorrow.
No, you're right. And they had 19 more inside 50s than the Crows. I know that game could have gone either way, and with that decision at the end with Draper, the potential holding the ball, but they had dominated a lot of elements of that game. As I said about their contest and clearance work, five out of their six games, they've won head-to-head clearances. So they're doing something right around contest. They're still giving up too many marks for mine, Bombers. So that's the element. Like, they've given up two big scores this year. Their two losses, Swans, 131 points, which they lost, and Port Adelaide, 111 points. So I just think the sides that go super aggressive against them, the super aggressive offensive sides, are the ones that Essendon potentially can't handle yet. So you're right. Brad Scott's got to come up with a way to slow down Collingwood tomorrow. And we know that's where Collingwood are at their best. Play with dare, play with creativity, look for opportunities to take Essendon on, because that's the one part of their game they're still working on. Contest and clearance is great, but that defensive transition, stopping big scores against aggressive offensive sides, is an element that Essendon are struggling with still.
Right. I know you've got a list of key elements for each. So just before we get to that, is there a questions around Essendon selection? So Brad has said they're going to play Draper and Goldstein, and Wright is coming back. So it feels to me like, I don't have a firm view as to whether Draper and Goldstein should or shouldn't, but the teams who have gone with the two rucks specifically to try to thwart Collingwood have come completely unstuck.
Yep.
Brisbane brought in Fort to ruck with McInerney, and it ruined their system for the night. And then last week, Port, for the first time, brought in Sweet to ruck with Soldo, and that never looked like it was going to work. Even when Port had the game on their terms early, neither of them is a forward. Draper showed us last week, I think he's not a forward.
Yep.
So it feels like the sucker play against Collingwood. We need to go with two ruckmen because of Cameron and Cox.
Yep.
And it doesn't work.
No, and you're spot on. And Cox and Cameron are so important. We probably don't talk about them enough because they are a team that plays with two rucks, but they both go forward and they both have an impact. You know, Mason Cox, he's a goal kicker. He doesn't need many opportunities. He's a sharpshooter in front of goal. And I think Cameron is still really underrated. It's that great quote we have in footy, Jared, that you don't need a great ruckman, but you can't have a poor one. And I think probably tonight, I think probably tomorrow, the opportunity, and it might be exactly what we said before, where they go with Goldstein and Draper, and whoever's got the hot hand stays on the field. But it might be an early third quarter sub that you just get rid of one of those big men, because you just need one of them to be able to go forward and have an impact. I just think they're too top heavy. They're too when this game needs to be running and power and explosiveness from contest, you just can't have all these big men on the field unless you're going to play them all reduced minutes. But that puts pressure on the rest of the team as well. You've got to play right because he's such a good player. He's such a good target inside their forward 50. But yeah, I just think they're too top heavy unless exactly what we said before with the previous game, that it is going to be a strategy. If there's no injuries early in the third quarter, you take one of the big men off and you replace it with speed. But yeah, the double teaming of Cox and Cameron hasn't quite worked yet.
All right. The checklist of the key elements for Anzac Day with Brenton Sanderson after Nathan in the newsroom. Nathan, thank you. Brenton Sanderson's in the studio now. Our weekly strategy session moved forward to Wednesday. Sando, give me your key elements, what each team has to get right. Let's start with Collingwood.
Yeah, well, Collingwood, they're still bottom five for inside 50 differential, so they need to get the ball in their front half. That's going to be a key element, I think, for Craig McRae tomorrow. They're just relying a bit too much on their back half at the moment. We saw that shift in the game against Port Adelaide. So if they can dial up their forward pressure, create turnovers in their front half, look for repeat inside 50s, I think that's going to be a key element for them. But I just think the number one key element for Craig McRae and the Pies tomorrow is I don't think Essendon can defend Collingwood for four quarters if they play with dare and creativity. So they must take the game on in offense. They can't take a backward step if they make a few mistakes. I just don't think, and I love the Essendon edge, I just don't think it can survive Collingwood if their offense is really going high octane. So, I think if Pies can score plus 100 points, they win. So the classic Lee Matthews, first to 100 will win this game. I'm thinking the Pies are just going to go red hot on this and try and break away with their offense in this game.
And for Essendon?
Well, if Collingwood's front half pressure is back, and we saw elements of that last week, they've got to discuss how they exit their D50. Are they really missing Ridley? I think he's going to be fantastic when he comes back. But if their front half pressure is back, Collingwood, they've got to discuss how they exit D50 with their offense. And can they stop Collingwood at the source? So I talked about contest and clearance. They can't let the Pies get outside. That's going to be the key element for Essendon, keep this game in a contest. And I think the final key element for Essendon is what to do with Dacos. I just think if Collingwood are going to win this game, Nick Dacos is going to have a huge game. So they've got to limit his influence. They've got to work out how they do that. And when they've seen what they've done recently with their midfield and how they've restructured and shut players down, Durham's probably the one that's going to get that role. Can that work tomorrow? It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, they've used Durham and Caldwell in roles recently, so they have a template for it where maybe they haven't had a template in recent years.
Yeah, they've had some success recently with those two players just playing that sort of lockdown, shutdown role. I'm sure they're going to look for that opportunity tomorrow.
Okay, Brenton Sanderson with the setup for Essendon and Collingwood. We're going to turn our eyes to Saturday Twilight, Carlton and Geelong, which is a loaded fixture next. This is Waitley for Hyundai. Drive away in a Hyundai Staria load from 49,490. Brenton Sanderson sets us up with our strategy session ahead of round 7. The pick outside of Anzac Day and the occasion is Geelong and Carlton. And there's rich source material here. Maybe so much of the strategy comes from the coaches. So the coaching matchup here is Chris Scott versus Michael Voss.
Yeah, this is awesome. Two former premiership teammates, two great mates. It's mouthwatering. And Chris Scott, we know how good he is tactically, and Vossi's done such a great job at Carlton. This should be two sides who are undefeated going into this game. Carlton lost to the Crows by 2 points. It's a game they should have won. This would have really set it up. But I don't know. Who do you want, Jed? If you could walk into this game and coach either side on talent, which coach's box would you walk into to coach this game?
I think I would take Carlton.
Yeah. It's almost like Ferrari versus Red Bull, isn't it? When you're Max Verstappen, which car do you want? These are two outstanding squads. Geelong have done really well. The Blues have got some injuries. That's the only thing that just makes me a little bit concerned about this week. But I'll start with the Cats because They have the fifth best offense at the moment, and they're back to number one defensively. I know they played in that wet game last week up at the Gabba. They were so impressive when that rain set in. But they're getting inside 50s. They're defending forward marks. They're forcing the opposition really wide at the moment. They're winning the inside 50 differential, and their defense looks just so settled. And the question will be now with Stewart out, the best defender in the competition, arguably. He's in an intercept marker. But just Guthrie just slotted into that nicely last week. But they've still got, obviously, Henry back there, De Conning, Colajasny. The way that they set up defensively is so good. And I guess the other element, which has surprised a lot of us, or me in particular, a few of those young midfielders have really stepped up this year when they needed to. So Bowes and Parfitt and Bruin, they've been excellent. And you throw, you know, Blitzavs with the experience, and Duncan sort of floats between zones. They've been excellent, the midfield, this week. And it's going to be tough because they go up against a fantastic Carlton midfield of Cripps and Walsh, Hewitt. You know, Walsh's couple of games back has been sensational. He's quickly returned to one of the most dominant midfielders in the comp. So the young Geelong midfield versus that gun, red-hot Carlton midfield is going to be fascinating too.
What's at the top of your Carlton list?
Well, how does Voss handle the injuries, I think? And I think the element that I really like at the moment about the Blues is they've lost some small forwards. They lost Fisher to North Melbourne. Motlop's injured, but Cottrell and the two Hollands, Owies, they've been fantastic. The way that they've been sort of buzzing around in the forward line, they get up the ground, they create turnovers in the front half. They've been excellent. The other one which I really like too, Jared, like the return of Pitnett back into the sides really helped with their contest and clearance numbers. But yeah, it's interesting with the Blues. I think I'm probably just jumping ahead a little bit here, that just with Sard and McGovern out, and I talked about the injuries, is how Voss handles Geelong's forward line. So we know Geelong's forward line, like Cameron Hawkins, Ollie Henry, then the smalls, Close, Myers, Stengel, Dempsey. How is Vossi going to be able to cover that forward line? They're going to have to, number one, limit Geelong's inside 50s, which means they've got to win clearance and contest. But with Wiedering, we know he's a star. But then you got Young. I know Williams is a test. If he misses out, that's another injury to their back line. Boyd, Kemp, can they handle this Geelong forward line if they get the volume of inside 50s? I think that's the key element of the game. We know Hawkins is going to play that midpoint role. Cameron's potentially going to play some tricks, get up the ground, get back inside forward 50. So, I mean, Wiedering will go to Hawkins, but then who gets Cameron when he gets up the ground? It's just, there's so many elements here that Vossi's going to have to try and be on top of. But then I'm thinking, if Carlton do win clearance, if Carlton get on top around contest and they start winning clearances, Geelong are so well set up behind the ball that they then slingshot going back the other way. So the strategy I've got for Vossi is, I think you've got to hold six forwards at all times. You can't give Geelong an extra number in their forward line. So that means you've got to play with six forwards. But then Geelong are so creative. They bring Blitzavs, or they'll bring a wingman back. Holmes can play behind the ball. We saw what Guthrie did last week. I think you've got to match that again. I think you've got to go with seven forwards. I think you've got to ensure that everything ahead of the ball is even numbers. Even if it's potentially clogs up your forward line, you cannot allow Geelong to have that plus one behind the ball. That's the key element if I'm Michael Voss in this game.
What about if you are Chris Scott? What's your key element?
It's how to take advantage of those small forwards. And I just think with the injuries that they've got, McGovern and Sard, if Williams misses, it's ensuring that the Cats' small forwards get up the ground to defend, help turn the ball over, but must reset as forwards when the ball goes forward. So look for opportunities. And as I said, I don't think clearance numbers is going to worry Chris Scott in this. But if Vossi evens up the numbers ahead of the ball, that's another chess piece that Chris Scott has to move. Okay, so if they go seven behind the ball, Geelong, and Carlton match it with seven, does then Scotty go eight? Does he go eight behind the ball? Yeah. Does he just keep reloading? At what point then do you stop and say, right, it's getting out of hand.
Yeah, yep.
Got nine players behind the ball and Carlton keep matching it. It's actually going to open up Geelong's forward line, which gives Cameron Hawkins and those small forwards more space. So this will be fascinating to see how this plays out. I just feel if Vossi and Carlton are going to win this game, it's going to be through that midfield are going to have to get on top of Geelong's young midfield. So Cripps, Walsh, Hewitt, they're going to have to look for opportunities to really dominate the game. So what will Scotty do with Cripps? Who's the big body that goes to him at stoppage? Do they send a forward up and in to try and limit Cripps' influence on this game? So there's so many things to watch in this game. And then, of course, the matchups, Curnow and Mackay, who go to them? Who tries to limit them? And then the Hawkins Cameron ones. I've got in my notes here, Jared, if you're a young key position forward, you got to go to this game. Because yep. you won't actually see as much on the TV screen as you will at this game live. So if you're a young key position forward and you want to get better, you've got four of the best in the current modern game playing on one field. Go to this game live, sit behind the goals and watch these four key forwards, how they go about it. That would be the advice I've got if you're a young footballer out there watching this game.
Last year, it was round two, so neither was a declared commodity at that stage, but Cameron kicked six and Curnow kicked five.
Yep.
It was just a splendid night of forward craft on that front.
Yeah, no, spot on.
All right, terrific. Well, that gives us a lot to chew over as we look towards a loaded round. Have you got a leaning in that one?
I'm leaning towards the Cats. I just, from what I've seen of Geelong, they just keep surprising me. I just think they're doing so many elements of the game really well. I just think Chris Scott at the moment is a step ahead of the competition with some of his strategy and the way that he's setting up the ground structurally. I just feel like he might have the coaching edge in this game. And as I said, the talent's pretty even, and I'd take either team. There's got so much talent, both ends of the ground. Just Carlton's injuries concern me. That's the only thing with this game that I think might give the edge to the Cats.
Terrific. I look forward to seeing you tonight.
Yeah, can't wait. I love this game.
Brenton Sanderson on duty for Richmond and Melbourne with us on AFL Nation. The 40 Wings temper text is 0433 98 11 16. The difference is temper. And call the Alltel open line 1300 736 736. Alltel, the better business telco.